Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it was only peripherally about the actual movies that were made last year, and more about, weirdly, musicals and Seth MacFarlane's sense of humor. Did anyone out there actually manage to stay awake until the end of the Oscars last night? I almost did. My next guests did. Joining us to debrief the very long, pretty strange Academy Awards ceremony are two guests, one movie critic and one TV critic, Dana Stevens, film critic for Slate, and TV critic Alan Sepinwall. Welcome back to WNYC. Hi there.
Hey, hi.
Thanks for having us.
Dana, let's start with what was ostensibly the point of last night's events, the awards themselves. No one movie swept the big categories. Life of Pi got the most with four awards, including Best Director. But then Argo won for Best Picture in what, for some critics anyway, was considered an upset over Lincoln. I want to play the clip of Ben Affleck accepting the award for Best Picture, Argo, the film he directed and produced, but was not even nominated for Best Director.
I want to thank them, and I want to thank what they taught me, which is that you have to work harder than you think you possibly can. You can't hold grudges. It's hard, but you can't hold grudges.
So did that strike you as a little bitter and entitled for somebody who just won Best Picture?
Maybe just a wee bit. I mean, Affleck had already gone through all of award season really milking the fact that he wasn't nominated for Best Director, so it was maybe a little ungracious to reference it there. Did you think so, Alan?
A little bit. I thought the speech was well over the map. There were parts that were really touching, and then there were other parts where he was clearly frazzled, and he probably wishes he had a mulligan on saying that his marriage to Jennifer Garner was work, for instance.
You know, I'm going to have to jump in, and Alan, we're going to try to get you on a better line, television critic for HitFix, Alan Sepinwall. And in the meantime, Dana, you were very unhappy with Seth MacFarlane in your column today on Slate. Tell us your reaction.
Well, I think that you're right that the first half of the ceremony was very much about Seth MacFarlane rather than about the movies that he was presenting. It's not so much that I was unhappy with him. It seemed that he never quite got the tone of his hosting right. He couldn't decide, and Alan addresses this in his write-up as well, whether he wanted to be the old-time Hollywood guy, whether he sort of wanted to be the next Billy Crystal, or whether he wanted to be the subversive shock comic who's going to bust up the Oscars. And so, for example, that crazy lead-in where we just got everything but the kitchen sink thrown at us in terms of musical numbers, jokes, you know, the sock puppet clip, which I actually thought was one of the high points of the Oscars, all of that stuff just seemed to be about Seth MacFarlane, watch me, see what I'm doing. And it really wore out his welcome quite early in the show for me.
And in fact, you wrote that the real recurring theme was a defensive anxiety about the ascendant power of women, meaning women in Hollywood. So here's a very short clip of something that I can't imagine that a lot of families were really happy about coming in the 8 o'clock hour on a Sunday night. You know, he not only told sexist and homophobic jokes, jokes about race, immigrants, Jews, he sang a song about boobs. And just to give people a very short idea of what that is, if you didn't see it, here's a tiny bit.
Meryl Streep, we saw your boobs in Silkwood. Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive. Angelina Jolie, we saw your boobs in Gia. They made us feel excited and alive. And Hathaway, we saw your boobs in Brokeback Mountain.
So, Alan Sepinwall is back with us, television critic for HitFlix and author of the book The Revolution Was Televised. What was that about? Why did he do that in the 8 o'clock hour?
I mean, that's Seth MacFarlane being Seth MacFarlane. Some of his shows air in the 7 o'clock hour, and that sort of thing wouldn't have been out of place. What was odd about it was he was clearly sort of – the entire 15-minute monologue was a commentary on Seth MacFarlane and expectations for Seth MacFarlane, and he was trying to do it apologetically, but he showed the entire song as opposed to just giving you 5 seconds of the song, and it just kept going, and he was listing names, and he was mentioning scenes from movies where the women were topless while being raped. It was not good.
And he had you know, these one-liners about Clooney dating young women, John Wilkes Booth, listen.
I would argue, however, that the actor who really got inside Lincoln's head was John Wilkes Booth. Really, 150 years and it's still too soon, huh? To give me an idea just how young she is, it'll be 16 years before she's too old for Clooney.
All right. Seth MacFarlane from last night, Alan Sepinwall from HitFix, Dana Stevens from Slate with us. That whole set piece at the beginning that included the boob song went back and forth between purposely tasteless things like that and totally straight song and dance. The storyline was, you know, he would do something gross and then his bad reviews from the future would appear, delivered by William Shatner, who did a cameo. Then Seth would do something traditional and see his reviews improve. And you know what? In that context, I couldn't even tell whether they were doing the soft shoe, old timey Fred Astaire kind of numbers, ironically or straight. Could you?
No, I mean, in relation to the We Saw Your Boob song, specifically when I was trying to write up the Oscars, I was completely puzzled by the reaction shots of the actresses during that song. I couldn't figure out what was going on with them, and I now think that they were interpolated from earlier award shows. They were just shocked faces that Naomi Watts and Charlize Theron happened to be making in the audience at some other show that were cut in with his song. It was impossible to tell whether there was actual mortification being experienced by these women whose boobs were being sung
right.
about. Or whether they were just framing this kind of fake humiliation. Either way, it was just not exactly a rich source of comedy.
Yeah, Alan, I think they were wearing different clothes, so it was definitely clips. And what I wasn't sure about when I was seeing that last night was whether it was just stuff that the producers used from past award ceremonies, you know, reaction shots that they cut in there for effect, or if these actresses were actually in on the joke. And they recorded clips knowing exactly what this production number was going to be. You don't
right.
know, right?
That's the third possibility, that it was staged somehow. But I think that really does speak to the tonal uncertainty of that opening that was just wildly wavering in between, you know, let's be provocative and shocking, and then just sort of old-time tuxedo glamour entertainment.
Alan, what did you think about Michelle Obama showing up to deliver the Best Picture Award?
I thought that was a nice moment, although it pretty much signaled that Argo was going to win. It's always weird when you're doing these things via satellite or via Skype as opposed to having her in the theater. But, I mean, the White House has participated in the Oscars before. Reagan recorded a presentation for, I think, the first Oscars that aired when he was president. I thought it was fine.
Dana?
I guess it bothered me a little bit, and it's hard to exactly say why. I mean, it just sort of felt, in terms of the symbolic register that Michelle Obama inhabits, that she was dirtying her hands by touching an Oscar envelope to me. It seemed different than reading a prepared statement up top. Reagan, of course, was also an actor and a former head of the Screen Actors Guild, so he belongs at the Oscars in a way that Michelle Obama kind of doesn't.
But there were some very good films and very serious-minded films. If you look at Argo and Lincoln and Zero Dark Thirty, and others, so maybe it was not inappropriate that she was there representing.
Yeah, I guess not altogether. I mean, I guess to me somehow the Argo win combined with Michelle Obama announcing it was a strangely anticlimactic end to the show.
You know what I thought, and I noticed that you thought that maybe Lincoln was going to win, or you saw patter on your Twitter feed that people were saying, oh, Michelle Obama is giving out this award. That means it's not going to be Argo after all. It actually is going to be Lincoln. And I had even a different thought, which is that it would be a decoy to make people think that Zero Dark Thirty would win because, you know, hey, Obama's elected and Bin Laden's dead.
Given the controversy over the torture, I have to think that Michelle Obama made sure that she would not be presenting an award to Zero Dark Thirty. That's just
right.
My guess.
Right, it's true. I don't think the Obamas want to be seen anywhere near getting cozy with Zero Dark Thirty. But even just the coziness with Hollywood, it just seemed like they were playing into the right wing's hands. You know, just the stereotype that liberals in Hollywood are in bed together.
She wouldn't have known, though, Alan, who the winning film was in that envelope she was holding, right?
Probably not, but on the other hand, I think if she wants to know, she has a greater ability to find out than, say, Jack Nicholson would have.
Right. She has security clearance at PricewaterhouseCoopers.
I guess so. I getting back to the films, I want to talk about the lesser categories a little bit, and the one that we dwell on this show, as listeners know, we interview the directors of the 5 nominated feature documentaries. And the one that won was the lightest, you know, most trivial fare of the bunch, searching for Sugar Man. And I had predicted it would either go to Invisible War, about rape in the military, which really broke new investigative reporting ground, or How to Survive a Plague, about ACT UP in the early days of the AIDS epidemic. Very well done documentary and, you know, of great personal meaning to people in Hollywood. So what do you make of Sugar Man winning this one? Was it because it was the first time that everyone in the Academy got to vote? Because I think more serious-minded documentaries have tended to win in the past.
Yeah, I think it would be hard not to make that connection. That's the one thing that's changed in the documentary category, right? And it is an unusual win. I was rooting for How to Survive a Plague myself, and Sugar Man is a perfectly inspiring. It's nice while you're watching it. You know, it's a good documentary. But I remember walking out of it with a lot of problems as to its reporting, and I won't get into them now. But it just seemed like journalistically, it did not have the chops of some of these, as you say, these better reported documentaries.
Yeah, me too. I thought it didn't hold. It had omissions, especially, and. You know, we asked all the directors in our series what they would say on stage if they won. And they were going to be talking about the Middle East, or they were going to be talking about enforcing sex abuse standards in the military, or they were going to be talking about the ongoing need for, you know, good health care, things like that. And the Sugar Man director really had nothing to say because it was just a trifle about this musician. But, Alan, nobody cares who wins Best Documentary anyway, and that moment came and went. Do you think that it makes it harder as a TV show to have a good Oscar telecast because there are all these technical categories that pile up in the first hour or so?
I think it's a huge problem, and it's one that's insurmountable without, you know, getting permission to get rid of some of these awards. There was an hour and 40 minutes of the show before we got to the second acting category, which was also probably the second category the average viewer actually cared about, with all due respect to great documentary filmmakers. It's just, it's this big, you know, cruise ship that's hard to steer, and they have to deal with it, and they dealt with it awkwardly with things like trying to play a lot of the technical award winners off with the Jaws music, which just came off as mean-spirited rather than funny the way I think they meant it to.
I thought it was funny. I'm tempted to use it for callers here from now.
You know, I thought the Jaws gag was funny in one situation when they were playing off the Life of Pi, someone accepting something for Life of Pi, and I don't remember what. Because with Life of Pi, of course, sharks are a big part of the fear that the movie's hero is going through.
Well, but there was one.
The Jaws thing got overdone.
There was one award winner for a technical category, and I forget who it was, who seemed to come up with the intent to purposely flaunt the hook music, the give you the hook music, no matter what it was going to be, and keep talking until they cut off his mic, which they did. And he could tell as he was standing up there that the Jaws music was getting louder and louder, and that's supposed to prompt him to stop. But he didn't stop anyway. He was practically drowned out by the music, and then his microphone got turned off. And I got the impression that this one guy went up there and said, okay, I'm going to just see what this is like, ha, ha, ha.
No, right. He was making a fairly emotional plea on behalf of the people he had worked with on the film, and he was trying to finish it, and of course it was hard to tell that because you were focused on the Jaws music. My take is, if you're going to have these categories, you let the people speak. This is the greatest moment of their career, and instead all he's going to be thinking about is how he didn't get to finish saying what he was saying because they were playing the Jaws music.
But nobody wants a lot of, you know, windy cinematographers, assistants, or people, whoever, up there talking and talking and talking. I guess they'd rather have Shirley Bassey singing Goldfinger off key.
You know, Brian, I would actually prefer a long-winded cinematographer's assistant to that long tribute to two very recent movie musicals, Chicago and Dreamgirls, that hogged a good, eternity of the broadcast.
Wait. You're disappointed that the producers of Chicago included two different salutes to the movie Chicago in the Oscars they were producing?
They were the same people, weren't they? Dana, I want to mention one more award because you and I have talked about it before on this show, the film Django Unchained. And I guess I was a bigger fan of it than you were, but they gave Quentin Tarantino what I thought was a very good award, Best Original Screenplay, which is one of those awards that says, hey, your whole movie was really, really good, even though he's obviously over-the-top violent and purposely offensive and all of those things. They gave him a very good award.
Yeah, I guess, although I'm not a huge Django fan, I do think he's enormously talented, and Django has great things in it. So I was not unhappy to see Tarantino get that award. What made me sad in the screenplay department was that Tony Kushner didn't get up and make the beautiful speech I'm sure he would have made had he won for Lincoln.
He certainly would have. And, Alan, last thing, have you seen the overnight ratings? I don't know if they're out this early in the morning, but for all anybody might want to diss their decisions about having too many schlocky musical numbers or whatever, and not letting, you know, the winners talk a little bit more, no matter what anybody thought of Seth MacFarlane. Did a gazillion people watch?
Ratings aren't out for about another half hour or so. We'll see. When they tried to appeal to the young adult demographic with Anne Hathaway and James Franco, it didn't really bring in any new young viewers. That's clearly what they were trying to do here with MacFarlane, but we won't know for a little bit later.
I'm predicting it held people pretty well last night. But then I predicted that Invisible War would win Best Documentary. So Dana Stevens, film critic for Slate, Alan Sepinwall, TV critic for HitFix, and author of the book The Revolution Was Televised. Thanks a lot.
It's always a pleasure, Brian.
Thanks for having me.